Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in studio, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Stephen Weasel Hurley, ready to break it down for you in just the way you like it. We never stop here at NGSC Sports, and that includes us here at the Student of the Game. Good times all the way around. We will be having G Stelio, G-W-S-T-W-L-I-O. On Twitter. We never had him on the show before, Weasel, but I go on his shows every now and again, and I do a lot of radio with him, and it's just, when G Stelio announces his Twitter handle, it's kind of an art. He goes, you know, just with the, at G-W-S-T-W-L-I-O.
Got that down.
I mean, well, no, even a rhythmless chump like me, because I'm not a hip-hop magnate like you are, Weasel. We know this. We're aware of that. I mean, I might have a darker skin tone than you do, but no hip hop. I don't feel it like you do.
Enough
of that line of questioning. But what I'm trying to say is this: with that, I can find the flow. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So,
I got you.
Well, let me ask you this, Weasel, because while we're waiting for G Stelio to come in, like I know you're not a big boxing guy, but the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. You hear anything about it, or
the thing was I was gonna go over to like maybe one of those bars or something and check it out, but didn't get to do that. But the whole thing about the fight is that I think people thought it would be a lot more exciting during it. But I think because Mayweather, I think the guy is like masterful at defense.
Correct.
And so I don't think there were any like, you know, one of those knockout punches that fall to the floor. You got to get back up type of thing. I think it was just back and forth and. I think it's just Mayweather, you know, he plays it safe, you know, if you got the opening, take the punch. So.
Yeah, it's, well, with all that, I'll put it this way. Like, even Oscar De La Hoya, who is allegedly a big name in boxing, I mean, not allegedly, he is, tweeted out that the fight was, quote unquote, underwhelming. I'm a football guy, not a boxing guy. Last time I paid a lot of attention to boxing, I was still younger than like 12 and watching fights with my dad. I mean, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention, as far as major fights go, maybe the other one I saw might have been recently, quote, Holyfield and Tyson, and then Lewis and Tyson, Lennox Lewis, who's awesome, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone told you this was not going to be a fight where you see big punches or any of that trash. Yeah. And yet Oscar De La Hoya is tweeting about how the fight was underwhelming. What did you expect?
It's about now, finesse.
Correct. Very good, Weasel. Now, I can't help but notice a little bit of salty in the fact that Oscar De La Hoya was also beaten by both fighters. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I just want to get that out here. This isn't a boxing show, but I guess I just kind of wanted to put Oscar De La Hoya on blast right there. Maybe that's my thing. I don't know.
Oh, and my only thing is at the end, I think it's 11 rounds, and then they pretty much, I guess, tally the scores and stuff.
Well, 12.
And it's like, That's how you determine who wins. I think it was like one of them was like 116 to 111 or something like that.
Well, 116 to 112 was what I had, and that's what two of the judges
had.
And
it's like,
so
it could go either way. So I think they should have just went until someone got knocked out. Boom.
Well, now you're changing the sport in its entirety. But with the way those two were going, we might have been there for another 4 hours. But enough about that. Let's get something a lot more exciting than two masterful boxers and their scorecards and all this other stuff. I'm bringing in to you somebody who's a friend of the show and hasn't even really been on this show yet. It's insane. But nonetheless, a guy who I love talking sports with, he may not always be right, but he's always going to come correct and be entertaining. The man who I know well, G.W. Gross, a.k.a. G. Stelio. What's going on, my man?
What's going on, fellas? How you guys are feeling tonight?
Hey, man, I'll tell you, I've been excited to have you on the show for a while. And now that you're not wasting your time with softball, we're gonna.
Why you guys take it there? It wasn't a waste of time. It's just that now the league has moved their game to Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so now you benefit from the schedule change. So now I can come on Monday night.
The world benefits with G. Stelio on the Student of the Game, baby. Know the rule.
That's the way it goes, man. I want to say real quick about the fight. Like, like, heard you guys talking about it, because I was one of the people who didn't want to watch the fight, but I ended up watching it. And to me, it was boring, but it was boring for all the right reasons. It was boring because Mayweather pretty much had Pacquiao under control, you know, and it just showed why Mayweather is undefeated. And there's a lot of people on Twitter, Facebook, whatever, saying all he does is run, all he does is run. No, he was just blocking, ducking, and dodging. That's not running. You know, and I'm no way here to defend Mayweather. I don't like Mayweather. But what I saw Saturday night was one of the best boxes of all time, just be the technician he is in the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he ducks, dodges, and on his way out of the way, he'll pop you with a jab while he's moving. It's a craft. The best defensive fighter of all time is something I've heard people throw out, including our very own Ralph Garcia. And I'm forced to agree. What can I say? But there you go. You know, well, I'll tell you what. Let's pile on this strong take that you just had with that fight, man. Look, I'm going to call it what it is and be able to say it on air now where people can record me and not just out on Twitter where I could always claim my account was hacked. But I read your Roger Cattell piece that you put up last week on Tuesday, and it's probably the single best take on Roger Goodell and the perception of him in his tenure of late, recently. And
I second that, too.
Yeah, and Weasel,
yeah, boy.
He's all aboard with it, too, man. So, I mean, it's right there. But, I mean, yeah, but kind of...
I appreciate that.
Kind of walk us through the high points of your thesis, because we definitely want people to go to ngscsports.com and check it out, because it definitely deserves its props. But give us the thesis there. Walk us through a little bit of that.
You know what? Yeah, actually, because, you know, it's Kyle Nash who has this email, and he says, all right, write about this, write about that. And you gave me Greg Hardy to write about his reinstatement or whatever the case was. And I was like, all right, you know, no problem. And as I started getting into Greg Hardy, I started doing research because, you know, you got to find out, you know, the length of suspensions, and I want to know specifics of what he's being charged for, what, you know, whatnot. So I went back, and I see everybody's attacking Roger Cattell, though, like, the whole way through. And it gets me upset because it's like everybody wants to aim at the powerful guy because that's the easiest thing to do. You know, it's easiest for us being normal, regular people to want to hate that guy who's powerful. Roger Goodell's been put in a situation that's kind of unfair to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I say unfair because all this stuff has been going on for decades in the NFL with players doing drugs, mistreating women, probably beating their kids too. We're talking about the 70s and 80s where, like when anything went down. It was the Wild Wild West when it came to parenthood in this country back then, you know. And Roger Goodell inherits this, and now because of social media and all these activist groups, he has to do something about it. When he signed on for this job, they never said, oh, you're going to deal with this too. This is brand new to Roger Goodell. And at the end of the day, the point I was trying to say is you can't get upset at him for the way he's penalizing these people or handing down suspensions, because this is new to him too. You know, he didn't think he was going to have to deal with this, and not for nothing, he is not a judicial system. He's one man with a lot of power, and it was thrown at him. And in a way, it makes him sympathetic, but I did point out, it doesn't excuse him being dumb. I mean, I mean, everybody has to realize, like, there's a difference between a bad guy and just being a dumb guy. And I was telling my friend this the other day, I was like, you guys up here, what Roger Goodell is doing in the NFL and how he's handling it, to like a grocery store bag clerk, like, you know, it's not like he's doing it on purpose, like spinning in your groceries and bagging them. The guy is just putting cans with your bread, and you're a little bit upset about it. You know, like that's the only way you got to think about it. I mean, he's just trying to do things as he's moving along.
You know, and as a guy who was a bagger in his high school,
me too,
and Weasel as well. We
same store.
That's right. We worked together at the Goodings over here before they tore it down in Castleberry. And, yeah, I couldn't put it better. I mean, it's not like it was overt or malicious, but by the same token, not crushing the bread is basic level stuff of your bagger. It's just that simple. I mean, you're all over it, dude. You know, and kind of the reason why I wanted to have this discussion is because I think there's other things that build on this theory that you've presented. And again, the theory in its entirety, very eloquently placed by the rhythm and flow of one G. Stelio himself, NGSDSports.com. But I think another aspect that makes Roger Goodell unique in his situation is also that the NFL Players Association in itself is a completely different beast. Okay, when Gene Upshaw died and Damaris Smith came in, it had never, ever to speak of been a contentious relationship between the two parties, the NFL and the Players Association, like it is right now. I mean, from having been in a position to be at the Players Association meetings in 2014, like I was, and hear some of the players talk about it, and even Damaris Smith himself a little bit say a few words about relations and things like that between the two parties. It's really kind of tantamount to the Republican Party and the Democratic Party kind of going at it mm-hmm. at times lately. It's yep. and because that contention is there, I mean, I feel like that a lot of the issues that were kind of swept under the rug because the two parties were working together are now kind of coming out in the open, like in the middle of the fight, this dust is getting kicked up. I mean, does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Definitely. And it's funny how you're doing the political part of it. But I would also say, too, it's hard for Goodell to look good. It's impossible for Goodell to look good. Especially nowadays, it's impossible for him to look good because of, not for nothing, and I guess I'm Puerto Rican, I guess I can play both sides of the fence. You know, not for nothing. There's a lot of, like, racial tension in the country right now.
Yes.
You know? And not for nothing, it's Roger Goodell punishing black athletes. And that's also something else I've heard, you know, and I've seen on Twitter. Oh, he does not. Especially when Adrian Peterson came up and about disciplining his child. He's like, oh, he doesn't understand. He's a white guy. No, Adrian Peterson is a monster, and he beat the crap out of a four-year-old kid. Look at that. There's no race discrepancy there because of discipline. You got to know your own strength. But that's something else Roger Goodell is fighting. And once again, it's something he inherited. You know, he didn't ask for any of this, you know, so to speak. It's just something else he has to deal with.
Just one thing about the Adrian Peterson thing. I think in the NFL, if you ask defensive backs, you ask secondary people, who is the most feared player that you would go up against?
That's a good
and
point.
And getting hit by Adrian Peterson, that's, you know, they pick him. Uh-huh. And then you have a 4-year-old boy, and you got Peterson with a switch.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
this is a guy that puts away safeties. What chance does a 4-year-old kid have? But it's a racial thing. Come on.
I wasn't a kid I'm not saying I got abused, but I got hit a lot when I was a kid because I never shut up, you know, so I always got hit when I was a kid, you know, and so I'm all about disciplining, even having a heavy hand as a parent, but when you see that and scars, yeah, you need to not play football for a while, you need to learn your lesson.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I know there were a couple times where I reached for something on top of my car and you kind of flinched because of how big I was. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's a joke. So, no, but yeah, I mean, I can't put that any better in that particular case. And I like how you mentioned, excuse me, the Adrian Peterson piece. And, of course, Ray Rice is an element, too. Greg Hardy, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the invariable, unwinnable scenario, the Kobayashi Maru, if you will, that Goodell faces is if he does punish, the race angle is going to get be taken. If he doesn't punish, the gender thing is going to come out. And all the studies tell you, man, more than half the fans actually female. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'll put it this way. A lot of people have accused Roger Goodell as bending to the fans. And I think they're right. But I don't think that's a bad thing, right? I mean, if the fans demand something from this billion-dollar behemoth, multi-billion, I guess I should say, dollar behemoth, and they actually listen, uh-huh. Hell, that's more than our government does. And to that point, I think what makes Goodell's job so unfair, quote, is he's set to a higher standard than the judicial system is when it comes to punishing these crimes, right? I mean, am I far off there?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the same thing I said, like, in the piece. You know, like when Hardy was tried, he was able to settle out of court. You know the judicialism like didn't do their due diligence. But that's pretty much the way our system runs. But Goodell has to go and punish the guy on top of it. It makes no sense, really. Like in a perfect world, the judicial system would be like, no, you can't go out and make millions of dollars playing a game because you just beat the crap out of a woman. And I'm telling you what, Kyle, after I started doing the research of the Greg Hardy thing, you know, because you just hear stories on the news, and for me, it's bad enough. A guy strikes a girl once, that's bad enough for me. Yeah. But when I went and read the report, he was like tossing her around his apartment, like,
yeah,
he treated her like a rag doll, literally. Yeah. And I was like, that's disgusting. You know, like, I mean, I kind of wish I didn't read it, because you don't have to, like I said, when it comes to domestic abuse, you don't have to read too much into the facts about it to be disgusted. And when I read about it, I was like, this guy shouldn't be anywhere near a football field to this. You know, when you're a football player and you're treating a regular human being, and I say that like me, because I'm not a professional football player, you know, like Kyle could probably take one or two shots from Greg Hardy before he starts crying. Me, he's gonna break my skull with one punch. You know, I'm a regular human being. You know, so he should not be anywhere near a football field. But whatever, this is the country we live in. I love it here. I'm not trying to sound like one of those people. I love it here. I ain't trying to get shipped out. You know, but the judicial system has questions. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you, giving Weasel credit for his research abilities here, I mean, we've talked about a bit about the heinous nature of the Hardy crime. Ooh, Hardy the heinous. That's kind of nice. But so yeah, I mean, in itself is just
heinous Hardy.
Crazy. Yeah. Go ahead, Weasel.
Well, referencing the Adrian Peterson case and the Greg Hardy case. So pretty much for Peterson, it was he didn't play all year, and he got paid. I think it was like what? I think actually he did get suspended from game 10 to I think game 16.
But basically the back half of the season. Let's just call it that.
So he got paid about, I think it was 9 games or so. And for that season, sitting on the exempt list, you got Greg Hardy. This one is like,
yeah,
he was franchised. And last season, he was set to make $13.1 million.
Weasel Weasel.
And I'm pretty sure that since he was an exempt list during that time, I think they had to pay that whole thing.
Yes.
Is there, what do you think would be a good thing to do? Because a lot of times there's cases where, well, the trial isn't over, charges weren't officially brought or anything like that. How do you think that they should handle this exempt thing? Because the Greg Hardy getting paid $13 million is like, and then he gets to take a year off. I didn't really like that. So what do you think about what the NFL could possibly do about that?
I think they should just go away with the exempt list, because it's just another one of those, a lack of better word, things that Roger Goodell has like in his quote unquote arsenal that doesn't do anything. It doesn't deflect the issue, and it actually doesn't help Roger Goodell. You know, and it doesn't help the NFL, because all people talk about now is they talk about the crime, the accusations, and then the suspension, and then the exempt list. That's another step of something you got to talk about over and over again. You should just have the suspension to get on the exempt list. That's just something made up, because Roger Goodell and his team got nervous. That's pretty much what the exempt list was. They're like, we need another form. We need some other level of to punish guys when they can't play. To me, it's nonsense, the exempt list. Just keep them suspended and just stop bringing up new terms for us to overanalyze.
Well, I'll say this, G, and look, man, you know I respect you as a smart analyst, but that response you just gave is proof that the exempt list work, and let me tell you why. If we're talking about the like you said, the accusations, the charges, the commissioner, and how stupid he is, we're not talking about the Panthers. How can they condone this? How can they let this happen? What were they thinking getting him? Why is Ron Rivera supporting domestic violence and all this other stuff? That's the head coach, for those who don't know. All that kind of minutia and bull that the public will drag into a conversation is suddenly null and void, and the team is still safe. Much like in the case of the Vikings, where they told Adrian Peterson, or excuse me, the governor of Minnesota was like, you better get rid of him, because we just bought, you know, spend all this money for your stadium and you're supporting this guy. You better put his butt on the bench.
There would be a lot of like controversy with him playing, because what are people in the stands going to be yelling? It's like, you're going to have, I think the crowd could get hostile and stuff like that. It's just that because of those are actually, I think early on, Peterson didn't understand how serious they were, but
he still doesn't.
Yeah. That's a big problem too. But others definitely will have their feelings shown. So I don't like it, but there's not much, you know, you could do. It's because if you let them keep playing, it's like the players will be kind of in danger. So,
I mean, and let's put it this way. It's not like the Vikings were going to get to the playoffs this year anyway. So, you know, I mean, the Panthers still made it to the playoffs with a losing record. So those guys, respectively, being off lits didn't hurt them football-wise. And they get the PR game. That might be a callous way to look at it, but that's what it is. Weasel.
Yeah, one thing I appreciated about the article was that it was telling how you have Greg Hardy, you have Peterson, you have all these cases, Ray Rice.
Yes, of course.
Where... they are, it's not the NFL's fault for, you know, how they're handing these suspensions out. It's about the judicial system in the United States right now. It's because you have essentially three guys that serve no jail time. And so, yeah.
Go ahead, G.
No, I was just going to say, I agree. It's just, on a side note and a lighter note, like, props to the Dallas Cowboys for pretty much running with no brakes. They went and signed Greg Hardy. They go and draft that pothead Randy Gregory. Like, the Cowboys just don't care. The Cowboys, like, we'll take all your baggage. We don't care. We're trying to lock this up. You know, so props to the Cowboys, at least, for just going with total disregard. Just going in for the defensive run. I got to respect that part of Jerry Jones. He gives no F's, as they say out here in New York.
Correct.
He just doesn't care. He doesn't care about your perception of him. He's like, yeah, Greg Hardy did this. All right, whatever. We're going to pay him this much because our defense sucks. This kid over here is a piehead. Well, we're going to draft this kid because no one else wants him. It's a deal. I mean, props to them. I didn't like their first round pick, though. I didn't like that kid from UConn. So that's another thing.
Well, yeah, zero F's given, as they say. And I'll tell you what, you can knock Gregory's personality all you want, but I'll tell you what, the Cowboys got him at a steal because they had picked him with that first round pick,
supposedly top 10,
correct. If they had picked him with that first round pick, no one would have been cracking on him for the football value. Just like, oh my God, you just doubled up on drama. Now that they got him in the second round pick, Jerry Jones, that could be the single smartest thing Jerry Jones did as a GM, you know.
Probably.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, what about that running back situation? Stay tuned.
Okay, that could be the single dumbest thing he did. We'll get into that later with Josh Zimmer for sure.
I was just saying.
Weasel, but yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too heavy on draft analysis, man. But, you know, since I know you like it, like, gee, let me ask you this. And because I know... normally, we don't do this on the student of the game, but I know that if we don't talk about hot chicks at least a little bit on a show you're involved with, you feel a little left out. Yeah, see, he's already excited. Look at that. I feel like I need to cue up the DMX clip as well. Then we'll get him completely filled up. He's got hip-hop and chicks. It'll be on like Donkey Kong. But so I went and checked out Avengers 2 this weekend, and I think her name's Melissa Olsen, Elizabeth Olsen, one of the two. I don't know, but the Scarlet Witch. Thoughts, G?
I'm going to Google her right now. Melissa something?
Olsen. Just look up the Scarlet Witch, man.
That's what I'm going to look up right now.
I'm a little disappointed you're not on top of this, man. I mean,
I'm not an Avengers guy. So it's like, you know, the Avengers is not my thing. Like, I'm all Spider-Man. I'm all gung-ho for Spider-Man. And they never got the girl right for Spider-Man. She's all right. She's a little goth-looking. She's a little too goth-looking for me.
It's like, get some sun.
Hey, who are you to talk, Weasel? Anyways, no, I just did that to make you feel a little bit more comfortable. That's all.
I'm looking at her now, though. I'm questioning everything about you now. Like, this girl looks really scary. Like, she's the kind of girl that wears all black, like, to a wedding. It's disrespecting the bride. Like, she looks like an evil girl. I mean, she doesn't look fun at all. Like, looks like a downer, Kyle.
So, dude, hold up. First of all, you're looking at the character's picture. If you check her out on her interview with Jon Stewart, she's definitely not goth. But I'm not saying I was all about it. It just seemed current. It was current, and it was about chicks. I thought you'd be all over this.
I'm disappointed in you. Once again, you disappoint me, but it's all right. You know who I actually been finding, like, pretty sexy lately? And I don't know. She's kind of like a hottie now, but I'm kind of finding her sexy.
Perfect
attractive.
For you, then.
Is Amy Schumer on the comedian?
Yeah.
Weasel's all over. Actually, Weasel gives props to Sarah Silverman, which I can't front on that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. She's bad, though. But Sarah Silverman's hot. Like, Amy Schumer's not hot. Amy Schumer just got some little thing going on. I always thought Sarah Silverman was hot, though. Like, hands down. I don't know how Jimmy Kimmel
ever got Matt. Like, he had it for a while. I don't know how
it was because of Matt Damon. You knew this.
Like, that's a mystery.
It's because of Matt Damon.
That's a humor. You know, goes a long way. Good for you.
It's because of Matt Damon, man. You knew that whole bit.
Matt Damon.
Thank you, Weasel.
Amy Schumer, though, guys. Like, she got something for me. I like Amy Schumer. She's on my radar now.
It's hot in a different way, though, with her, you know? It's kind of like people like her, you know, her dirty humor and the way she, you know, presents herself. But, yeah, it's one of those things.
Weasel does his research on all topics, ladies and gentlemen. Know your role here on the Student of the Game. So let me reel you back in and get back to football real quick. I'll ask you just because I know you're a fan. Did the Bears draft take you a little bit further back from the ledge that you were about to hurl yourself off of as Cutler is failing?
Why are you throwing that last little jab, though? There was no reason to throw in that last jab whatsoever. But,
hey,
but,
because it's you, G.
That wasn't even fair. No, let me tell you, I was nervous before the draft because, you know, that's the thing about pre-draft. I actually wrote about that for NGSC.com today. It's just like you hear all this hype and it gets you nervous, you know. People are like, oh, the team might trade and do this, you know, all these scenarios. And the thing I kept hearing was Bears were going to package this year's first, next year's first, and Cutler to Tennessee to get Mariota. And I was like, oh, please, God, no, you know, because I don't want to be anywhere near that. So when that didn't happen, and I got a little upset when Fowler got picked, but when White landed to us, I couldn't have been happier, you know, because it was between White and Williams. The Jets took Williams. We took White. I was fine with that. I actually really liked our draft. You know, I really liked our third round pick. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but Aronis Grassi, the center out of Oregon. I actually think he's the best player coming out of Oregon in this draft, taking a slight jab to Mariota, you know. So I was actually really happy with that pick. You know, but the Bears did well. They drafted a running back from Michigan State, too, Langford. So here we go, Matt Forte. You're on the training block, according to me.
Boom. Hey, they had a better draft than the Niners did. I know that. Weasel.
I think according to...
Wow. Yeah, definitely.
Whoever the GM was...
That was brutal. That was brutal, that 49ers this year in the draft.
He didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, I got you.
The
I
Niners
you.
Draft was just really that bad. Seriously. I'm just trying to tell you, Weasel. It's straight trash. But go ahead.
I think
Weasel.
The problem that the Bears have mostly is that that GM who signed Cutler to over $100 million contract. And the thing is that made him untradeable. So I think they could have gotten rid of him because I don't think they were very happy. But that GM, I think he's not there anymore. No one's going to take over that contract.
No, they won't.
So, tough luck, but at least they drafted a good wide receiver. Number one wide receiver. Yes. They did good there. So.
Yes. No, Kevin White was a great pick. Kind of a no-brainer. Yeah. And, I mean, more teams missed on more no-brainer situations, like the 49ers not drafting Bud Dupree.
Yeah.
Calm. Okay. Yeah. Hoosah. I mean,
and you know what? And when it comes to undrafted free agents, I actually forgot the guy's name. Maybe one of you guys do, but the Bears actually went and signed the wide receiver from Baylor. And I thought that was a good one for an undrafted free agent. I mean, undrafted rookie free agent. Because I really think Alshon Jeffrey's going to move to everybody he's spoken errors this year. So I think he's gone, you know. So wow. I think it's good. You got to start stocking up on wide receivers again.
So you're giving me smoke and mirrors on Alshon Jeffrey. Weasel, man.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure your wife don't listen to this show.
He's good, though. I think he's good to watch.
Just so you're aware, G.
He's good. It's not like he deserves a mega contract. And
oh, right.
If I'm the Bears, he's a career number two, and he's a highlight guy. Like pretty much that's the way I see him as. Like, I don't really see him as anything else. Like, he still can't run routes. He still struggles blocking. Like, the basic things you need a number one to do, he's not going to do it. And basic things you need number two to do it sometimes. You know, so, I don't know. Like, I'm fine with Kevin White for the future.
Is Alshon Jeffrey the Blake Griffin of the NFL?
You still hate Blake Griffin, huh?
I know. I don't hate Blake Griffin, but he's a lot of flash. No. Hey. I like Blake Griffin. I'm talking about what the public perception is, my man. Don't get it twisted.
I actually hate Blake Griffin, so I don't care.
That's a you problem.
I looked up a little thing. Yeah. I picked a wide receiver out of the blue type thing. What do you think of 1,400 yards and 7 touchdowns for 2013? And in 2014, what do you think of 85 receptions, 100, 1,133 yards, and 10 touchdowns.
Trash. Burn him.
Trash. Trash. Trash.
Well, we're coming up.
That was Sean Jeffrey, just to make sure you know.
Working opposite Brandon Marshall helps a lot.
Yeah, you know, I was about to say.
That helps a lot. You know, and the one thing I will give Jeffrey, and I've always said, I said this to Kyle a couple of times too, he's great at locating the ball in the air. I think he might be top three in the league when the ball's up in the air.
Yes.
He just locates it perfectly. Like, there's very few who do that, you know?
Yes.
But as like I said, as a number one, I will let him walk, and I'll let him go sign with some team that's terrible like the Rams or something and let them deal with it.
That works, man. So I'll tell you, man, we're coming up at the half point of the show here. We're about ready to jump in with Josh Zimmer to talk some draft grades and things like that. We're definitely going to get you on again because this was entirely too much fun. I mean, it's just that simple. But, man, let the people know where they can find you at, brother.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Weasel, and thank you, Student of the Game, for having me on.
Yeah,
you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and the .com website, GCLEOGEESTELEO. Oh, and you can catch me on Twitter because I'll be updating my softball stats all Wednesday night, just for you, pal.
Oh, my God. The dude is money. I mean, I'll leave it at that, brother. Hey, man. We'll get you on here again next time soon. I mean, what can I say? Because he is none other than the heartthrob, G. Stelio, man. You have a good night, brother.
You walk out of here, man. Have a good night, guys.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Hey, did you not hear him just drop the GEESTELEO?
It's smooth.
It's memorable.
It is.
You think I just made that all up to open the show? It's real.
It's totally smooth.
Anyways, let's spend less time on that. I got my man Josh Zimmer on hold here, so let's hit the break. We'll be right back very shortly. Of course, you are listening to the Student of the Game on NGSC Sports. I don't know. I went with the I'm the man break music today, Weasel, because it seemed when you have a dude on that's named the heartthrob, you got to go that direction with your theme music. It made a lot of sense. I thought about going with DMX since, you know, I mean, G Steel is a hip hop artist in his spare time. He's retired now.
Just, you know, got to mix it up, though.
You know, I mean, hey, look, that's on me. I got to get some more stuff here on my desktop. But enough about that. I have plenty of other shortcomings, including my ability to cover the draft. But this is why I keep quality people in my pocket. The other week we had the young man of Austin, known as Montel Hardy. We've had this gentleman on here before to lay things down. He will drink the draft while he breaks down the draft. And damn it, if we're not all more fun and beneficial for it, my man Josh Zimmer back to give me some more draft analysis that I need so much help with. What's going on, Josh?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you guys doing this evening?
Hey, man. I'll tell you what. Always stoked to talk with you and help me make sense of things that I may not have normally been able to do myself. I mean, yes, I know. I won that trophy and all that with some draft stuff. But, you know, I can't take all the credit there. I had some help from a friend of the show, Travis Holmes, formerly of Big Cat Country, walking me through that. But, I mean, hey, I know where my bread is buttered. And look, I'm the host of the show. I'm going to be selfish to open it up. Tell me why, Josh Zimmer, other than the fact that I have a daughter that I love dearly, am I not slicing my wrists over the 49ers draft? What is this trash?
Hey, well, you know, I think a lot of people really kind of hammer the Niners draft solely off of, you know, the one selection they made, which was Eric Armstead. And, I mean, you have to look at, you know, we had a chance to talk about this off the record a couple of times, and he's a guy that I really like. Very versatile. You know, you look at the way your guys' defense is starting to change. You know, obviously, Justin Houston may be retiring. You guys do not have the defensive line depth you guys had. This is kind of that type of guy that they're going to be able to bring in and really go more of an interesting route in terms of schematics to do that. I don't think they've really had that flexibility nor so the versatility to be able to do that. So it will be really fun for fans to kind of just sit back and really watch on how this kind of unfolds. Because, again, he's a guy who has, you know, he has the highest upside of really, in my opinion, anybody in the class. But he's not as, say, not as NFL-ready from day one as, say, maybe a Leonard Williams. Like, he's going to go through his bumps in the road. But, I mean, let's face it, the Niners' defensive line coach is now the head coach.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they're going to make sure that this guy is ready to roll.
So, I mean, I personally would have drafted Bud Dupree at that point. Would I have been out of my mind to do so?
No, not at all. You know, I think the way that you look at that defense, I mean, he kind of could fit that Justin Smith role. He could be the true, you know, 4-3 defensive lineman. He could put his hand in the ground. He's also a guy who could play like Alvin Smith and stand up. But I was a little taken back by the pick, but I wasn't upset by the pick. You know, we will say that. I was not upset by it because he's a guy that I really like. But I was taken back by it when you look at some of the things that they could have gone. They could have gone wide receiver. They could have gone, you know, corner if they really wanted to, but with Trayn Waynes off the board. And obviously some of the issues that have gone on within the Niners front office and even, you know, players to coach, it probably would have made a great idea getting a guy like Marcus Peters.
Yeah.
So, you know, but no, in the short end of things, I wouldn't have been upset had they taken Bud Dupree because I think he's, again, another guy who they would have been able to plug in and be a true mainstay defensive end, and he probably would have fit in that scheme extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, as far as needs go, I mean, not for nothing, and maybe I'm biased because of the side of the line that I sat on versus you, sir, I would have liked him to see them get a little bit more of that depth with the beef. Because there were too many times last year, Jonathan Martin, who's no longer with the team for this very reason, I'm sure, just got beaten across his face entirely too many times for my taste. I'm sorry. But, yeah, that O-line probably could have used an upgrade, in my opinion. But, I mean, I don't know. Am I out of my mind there?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that they should have updated. You know, I think they should have gone with some upgrades in the offensive line, especially when you look at how the draft fell. I mean, in the second and third round, there's still some quality offensive linemen there. I mean, a guy who I'm going to be raving about until camp starts is T.J. Clemmings, who the Vikings stole in the fourth round. That should be straight-up treason if you can get a guy who has a first-round grade in the fourth round.
Yeah.
And the only reason he did was because of a stress fracture in his foot. He would have fit perfectly, and he would have been able to come in and play either tackle or guard, which is something that they tried to find Jonathan Martin to do. But, you know, if you want to look at their defensive depth, it's really not that bad. You know, you talk about a guy like Bud Dupree. So, yeah, they took Armstead, but then they go in the third round and you get a guy like Eli Harold, who, again, it's really kind of like that Bud Dupree-type prospect. He's able to, you know, pressure the edge extremely well. He can play in space, and he has great size, which is what they like out of their outside linebackers, with him being 6'3", 247.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, the Vikings have no history taking a risk on a guy who's dropped a little bit because of injury history. None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
There is no significant NFL player connected to the Vikings who... No, I'm going to stop now because I think everybody gets the joke by now.
I think so, too.
But Josh, man, so let me go ahead and go through the required questions. Obviously, we'll never really know for at least 3 years who the winners slash losers of this draft are, but give me your top two standouts as best and worst for the 2015 NFL draft so far.
Well, I would be, you know, people are going to call me biased for this, but really, when you really sit down to look at it, and even look at some of the other analysts that have said it, I do think the Minnesota Vikings have themselves a hell of a draft.
Yay!
You can say that just within their six picks, and I'm going to list them right now. You got Trey Waynes, 6 foot, 186 pound corner, a desperate need. He's able to come in right away and play in that press cover two scheme that Zimmer likes. And then we get to the second round, which had to be, you know, the makings and workings of God to have Eric Kendricks still be there with the 13th pick in the second round. We're able to get ourselves an inside linebacker who was also Anthony Barr's roommate. Now, the guy who I'm really excited about is Danielle Hunter, the defensive end out of LSU. Obviously, we traded back twice with the Chiefs and the Lions to select at 88 overall. But when you look at this guy, people were wrecking him and killing him on Twitter and killing the Vikings on Twitter for taking him. He's 6'5", 252. Yeah, he's a little bit raw, but go back a couple years to when Zimmer was still with Cincinnati. They had a guy by the name of Michael Johnson, if anybody remembers that name, who ended up being a $55 million man. But obviously people found out that it was Zimmer's scheme, not his talent, that made him that good. He's going to be able to build up Danielle Hunter, and he's going to be able to play that Michael Johnson type role for the Vikings. And then, of course, I mentioned TJ Clemmings, Michael Pruitt, the tight end out of Southern Illinois, who, if people go and look at my stuff, I had him. He was my fifth overall rated small school prospect, and I also had him as my number two second round pick type tight end. So I think they had a great draft. I think the other team that had a really bad draft was the Green Bay Packers. And you look at what they did. Obviously, they drafted Ha-Ha Clinton Dix last year. Why on God's green earth would you select Demaryius Randle, a guy who virtually plays the same exact position? He's going to be probably a nickel-type guy, but who was still on the board there? Landon Collins. Why not get a guy who could play in the box for you? You got a guy. You need linebacker help. You didn't want to think that you wanted to take Eric Kendricks. Green Bay's draft really shocked me because it's not a draft that you normally see from the Packers. You really don't. It really seemed like they were kind of getting flustered because the board wasn't going their way. And you can even talk to Montel about it, who's a Bears fan. He'll probably wreck him a little bit more than I will here in the coming days. Just because of it, but I did not like Green Bay's draft at all.
Interesting.
But another team that I really liked was the Atlanta Falcons. I thought the Falcons had a great draft.
Got a quick question for you about the going back to the Vikings. So you had some high words, good words to say about Trey Waynes. The question is, though, is that Devontae Parker from Louisville, who previously I think he played with Teddy Bridgewater for about 2 years, did the Vikings make the right pick picking? Waynes is the way to go?
Here's why. People really hammered me on this for Twitter. And I even called it in the second round, too. I called the Eric Kendricks pick that morning, so a little bit of boast for me right there. But here's the thing. If they pass on Devontae Parker at number 11, and yet, that tells you that they're extremely comfortable with their receiving core. Now, people hammered me and said, well, how can you feel comfortable with a guy like Charles Johnson, who was a nobody, and a guy like Patterson, who has yet to prove himself? Well, we gave up a fifth-round, we gave up a seventh-round pick to get a seventh and Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace is going to be able to do what Devontae Parker is going to do. He's just not that tall. They run virtually the same speed, with 4.45. And then you've got Patterson, who is going to develop. He's been working with Chris Carter this year, so you know that he's going to be at least a better route runner. Obviously has been remained to be seen. But I think they made the great pick. The easiest way to win in the NFC North is by defense. If you have a great defense, particularly in your pass defense, when you look at the quarterbacks they have to play, you have a shaky Jay Cutler. But then you have a guy like Matthew Stafford, who when he's on, he's on. And then Aaron Rodgers, you don't know if he's ever going to be off. That's the thing. And the way the Vikings run their scheme, they run the true press cover two. We saw Xavier Rhodes take a huge step forward in his second year. I mean, he virtually killed it. In his, this was his third year, virtually killed it. So I'm not upset at all. I thought they did a great job with their draft throughout. And to me, I love the Trey Waynes pick more than everybody else just because of the fact that if you go back and look at his stats, playing the boundary corner, which is your press-type corner in college, he's only given up 3 touchdowns in the last 2 years, which is extremely impressive. Now, people say the Big Ten is not very good, but 3 touchdowns nonetheless is straight-up impressive. So he's going to fit into Zimmer's scheme well, and I'm really anxious to see how that defense really molds with the pieces that they've added and then with the pieces that they're obviously bringing back.
Well, let me we'll see. First of all, I mean, I get the pass defense, for lack of a way to describe it, because look, Harrison Smith was the student of the game rookie of the year, at least from my perspective, when he came in. That's right, I said it. Xavier Rhodes did make leaps and bounds, but okay, playing the quarterbacks that you listed, I mean, look, Ian Cutler can pull a long ball out of his butt every now and again and land a touchdown because that's the nature of quarterback he is. He is indeed a gunslinger. But you know, even despite the Brett Hundley pick at five, picking him well lower than he might have been projected, still down on the Packers draft, I find that interesting. I was a touch impressed. But let me ask you this. The Patriots are getting very little talk of their draft, and just looking at their board, I'm kind of liking what they did. I would pick them among the top three drafts total. I mean, am I completely out of my mind or what?
Well, one thing I want to know about the with that draft was, can you go back what you said before?
What, about the Patriots?
Oh, yeah, Patriots. I forgot what the guy's name was, but they picked a player that I think they did it in past years too. They picked a player that people were like, he's supposed to be undrafted, or he should go in the seventh round, and they pick him early. I think that happened this draft. Hear anything like that?
Well, I mean, they picked him in the second round. They got Jordan Richards at the safety spot. He's been getting that kind of play, if that's the guy you mean, I think. But yeah, Josh, go ahead and add to that. I mean, with the Patriots draft, I mean, just break it down, because I think they kind of went under the radar with how well they did draft.
They did. I mean, really, you know, we're going to be, you know, me and Montel will be getting together and releasing our draft grades by Thursday. But the way that I kind of look at it, had they have gotten rid of, you know, because if people don't remember or even heard about it, there were talks that the Houston Texans were going to swap to draft Malcolm Brown with the 32nd overall pick on Thursday night. New England killed that because they found out who they were going to draft. Had they have not taken Malcolm Brown, they probably wouldn't be in the discussion of having a great draft. I do like the fact that, you know, they did add some defensive line depth. You know, they did get a guy like Trey Flowers, who Montel and I both had second and third round grades on. Montel's really high on him. I'm not as much. But, you know, it's a guy, he's going to fit that defensive scheme quite well. I do like some of the depth that they've added to the offensive line. A guy that I really like, who I was really hoping Minnesota was going to take him, but it just didn't fall that way, was Shaq Mason.
Yeah.
You know, he was the 32nd pick, you know, in the fourth round. We ended up going Clemmings instead. But, you know, Shaq Mason's a guy who people kind of get lost that Georgia Tech guys don't know how to pass block because they rarely pass block because it's a run-based offense. Well, that's not it at all. This kid really, you know, when I was down at the Senior Bowl, he was probably the most impressive kid that I saw on the offensive line, and that's including Ollie Marpet from Hobart, who had a phenomenal weekend, and even, you know, Lakin Tomlinson from Duke, who somehow the Lions just, I think they drew a name out of the hat, and that was who their first-round pick was going to be. But, you know, we can always talk about that one later. I thought he was the most impressive guy. So I feel like they got a steal in the, you know, with both of their fourth-round picks, with Trey Jackson and, you know, Shaq Mason. It's really interesting to see how, like, again, we're not going to know about this for the next couple of years, but when you look at it early, their O-line depth, you know, the guys they added on the offensive line, you know, obviously, Malcolm Brown's going to come in and be a starter. Geno Grissom and Trey Flowers are obviously going to be some sort of package-type guy, you know, situational-type pass rushers. They definitely got some guys who are going to be able to contribute early and often.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I like the most is all the necessary gaps that they lost, they're at least making an effort to replace them. Like, to be clear, and not enough people make enough noise about this, when the New England Patriots were successful is when their defensive front and their defense in general is at its best. And if you have Vince Wilfork gone, that means this is the first time in over a decade that they have not been substantially awesome in the middle. Malcolm Brown could solve that problem, and they got him as a steal, so there's that. And every other pick, except for maybe a couple, picked what was probably a glaring need, offensive line, and every level of the defense was addressed. They got a tight end in there somewhere, but hey, why not? if they're looking to adjust to be more of a run style for whatever reason, if they're truly that low on wide receiver depth, which I think they're going to be just fine, you know, I'll put it this way. This is probably the best draft I've seen amongst defending champions since I've been following it. And, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and the biggest reason for that is because they actually decided for what seems to be a while now, they actually decided to keep their first-round pick. That, to me, was the biggest key this year as to why I think they are probably going to have a top-five draft grade. You know, if I were to give them a grade right now before even really looking at it, I'd give them a B-plus or even an A-minus. Because of everything that you said, they added guys who are going to be able to play right away. And the fact that they kept their first round pick and was able to get a guy who, you know, can fill the need of losing a guy like Vince Wilfork. I mean, it goes back to the Kentucky version of they don't ever rebuild in New England. They're just reloading. And that seems what they've actually officially done with this draft. People and analysts should be confident to say, they reloaded. They didn't have to rebuild.
Weasel, you got anything?
I was going to switch gears a little bit to good old Marcus Mariota. Now, we got the number two pick, and there was a trade proposed by the Eagles. And supposedly what it was offered was, it was kind of, it would turn out to be seven players. You got two first-round draft picks, one third-round draft pick, cornerback Brandon Boykin, you got defensive end Fletcher Cox, linebacker Michael Kendricks, quarterback Sam Bradford. Now, did the Titans, just sticking with Mariota, should they have taken this trade, or do you think staying right there and grabbing Mariota was the right move?
Realistically, had it not been Mariota, had it just been for the number two spot, I would have said yes, because you look at, I mean, look at some of the guys you've listed. You know, Brandon Boykin, he's a contributor as a nickel guy in that defense. That's a big loss, especially in the NFC East. Then you talk about Fletcher Cox, who, after losing Trent Cole, is probably their best defensive lineman. You know, I know people like Cedric Thornton, but I like Fletcher Cox ever since he came out of Mississippi State.
Agreed.
And then when you lose Michael Kendricks, if they were to trade Michael Kendricks, which could still be a foregone, you know, we could just be, you know, foreshadowing because he's still on the trading block. That is what exactly he said he wasn't going to do, which is mortgaging the future. So I think it was smart. You know, the quote that he said, you know, is like, you know, we drove up to a really nice house, had a great view, and then we saw the price tag, and we continued to drive. I'm happy that the Titans didn't bite the bait, because I'm not a Zach Mettenberger guy. That offensive line, whether or not they're high on Michael Orr, which I can't believe they are, if they are, you can't be good with just Taylor Lewan. And that running game, you know, they drafted Bishop Sankey, but he didn't fit. Now that they have Marcus Mariota, he fits that type of offense. And, you know, Ken Whitehunt, who's normally a stubborn coach, who doesn't want to really change his schemes or anything like that, has already publicly came out and said, we are going to try and meet 50-50, bring some of the Oregon style to him, and make his basically development and progression a lot faster. So would it have been interesting? Of course. Everybody loves to hear about trades. As a matter of fact, and I was watching Rick Spielman's press conference on Friday morning, and he even said that this was actually one of the more lazy type drafts where people didn't want to trade up. They really just stuck to their board and drafted who was there at that position. So we didn't see very many trades, which was not normal for a first round. But I think the Titans wouldn't have the draft class they did had they have not. That pick of Doriel Green Beckham wouldn't have mattered if they didn't have Marcus Mariota to go with it.
And I read a tweet, and it said that Ken Whitehunt, what he's saying, it's that's the plan on Mariota starting in week one. Sounds like a mistake to me.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest thing with that is, you know, I personally think it's a good idea. Now, if he is completely ready to go, or you have offensive schemes or your philosophy has changed enough to where you feel comfortable throwing him out there week one, then yeah, I would do it. Because the one thing they're going to do is you're kind of going to get an RG. I'm going to call my shot now on the student of the game that you are going to see a Robert Griffin type offense in Tennessee for that first year for Marcus Mariota to get him comfortable. And I think he's going to do solid. People always said, well, you can't run the option or even the read in the pros because the NFL is too fast. Well, teams have now realized, well, when you have speed versus speed and you have to think while playing fast, it's a lot harder than it's easily to be said. So that's why I really believe Marcus is going to succeed, is because he's a true dual threat type guy. Jameis ain't going to beat me in a 40-yard dash. I've been out of the game for 2 to 3 years, but I do know that I would beat Jameis in a 40 if I had to chase him down. Marcus, I'm not chasing Marcus down. I'm lucky to even, catch a scent when I'm running after him. He's going to be probably 20, 30 yards ahead of me. And that's what's going to kill people, and specifically teams in the AFC South.
Yeah. I mean, still though, that's an awful lot of material to pass up for Mariota, man. I gotta tell you, I mean, and I'm not saying either side is right or wrong at this point, because as we keep siding, it's too soon to do so. But man, that's a lot of material to pass up on if you're the Titans, and you need help everywhere like you do. But I'll put it this way: I guess we can confirm, Josh, that we called correctly, that them liking Mettenberger and him being a poor man's Tom Brady was probably one of the dumbest smoke screens we've ever seen. Yes,
I was. Yeah, they were like pretty much praising Mettenberger all off season, saying how he could be the franchise quarterback and he has the talent. And then they draft Mariota. And it's like, he'll be looking for a trade.
Psych. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Welcome to the world of smokescreen. That's exhibit A for smokescreen material. I mean, did teams buy it? Of course, because even late in the process, I was still thinking they were going to go Leonard Williams, and they completely. I mean, my last mock draft had them going Leonard Williams, so they completely had me fooled. But when you look at it now, you can see why they really want him there, and that's just because he's going to be able to provide a spark. And the one thing that the Titans do not have, they don't have a face of the franchise.
Right, I was about to say
one
that.
One of these franchises, whether it's a crappy franchise like the Raiders or the Jags, they all, or even now the Bills. I mean, of course, they traded for LeSean McCoy, so they have some sort of face. Everybody has a face of the franchise. These guys were basically just floating in oblivion. They didn't have anybody to really lean on and market and say, you know what, yes, this is our guy. And Mettenberger proved last year that maybe he could be the guy, maybe he couldn't be. But Marcus is definitely a very marketable type player to be able to build your franchise around from both a business and a on-the-field type standpoint.
Yeah, and hopefully for his sake, he does better than Vince Young did as the most recent version of a face of the franchise the Titans went with. We're coming up on closing down here. Before you take off, Josh, give us the one thing that we should take away from this 2015 NFL draft.
Well, realistically, I'm going to announce it with some pride. The one thing that you should take away from this draft is that small school guys are going to be found. NGSC Sports, we did a special thing this year called Draft Journey. All of our guys got into an NFL camp this year. All of them, every single one of them. And I'll list them real quick. Alex Singleton went to the Seahawks. Zach Wagerman went to Montana. John Crockett went to the Packers. Reggie Bell to the Redskins. Division two kids, a quarterback. Chris Bonner went to the Carolina Panthers. And Javonte Williams out of Johnson C. Smith, the defensive end, went to Carolina. So don't buy the hype that the FBS is where it's at, because there are some very solid FBS kids and individual kids out
there. There you go. So small schools playing big. I like it a lot, brother. All right, Josh. Well, we got to go ahead and wrap up, my man. Let the people know where they can find you.
Hey, yes, sir. As always, you can find me at ngscsports.com, and you can find me on Twitter at jzimmer_NFL.
Draft Central's very own Josh Zimmer at NGSCSports.com. Thanks a ton, Josh.
Hey, anytime. Appreciate it, brother. You guys have yourselves a good evening.
Thank you.
So there you go. See, I mean, yeah, I mean, there were some things where I didn't necessarily agree with him 100%, but overall, I mean, you know, definitely a strong take. I would not try to participate in a match of draft fencing with one Josh Zimmer. Boom. So with that, though, however, we had two very awesome guests. We had two very, or more, very awesome discussions. Solid show all the way around. What can you say, Weasel? Boom.
Word.
So with that, we're going to go ahead and bid you all farewell. So until next time, everybody, you can find me on Twitter at TheSOTG. You can find Weasel on Twitter at WeaselTheSOTG. And, of course, Chris, who will be with us next week, at Hydraulic Upright, UPRITE, on Twitter. Until now, Hydraulic Upright. Weasel still has to laugh at it. It's great. And, of course, you can find all we do on NGSCSports.com. You can hear us on Spreaker, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, TalkShoe, among other places. But until next time, class dismissed.